Paul Kavika Martin, Policy and Political Director with the National Group Peace Action. Paul, great to have you on tonight. Glad you could be with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Scott.
If you would just say a word about Peace Action. There are many listeners who know well the work that you do there for many decades now. But say a quick word of the things that you're working on right now.
Sure. Just a reminder, we're about 60 years old. Some of your older listeners will remember us as the Committee for a Sane Nuclear Policy, founded around abolishing nuclear weapons. In the 80s, we formed with another organization called the Freeze Movement, which was formed to freeze the number of nuclear weapons being built in the world. And we were known as Sane Freeze for a number of years and changed our name to Peace Action in the late 80s. And now we work not only on abolishing nuclear weapons, but reducing Pentagon spending and finding alternatives to war in areas such as Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq.
Thanks for that, Paul. Originally, we had scheduled this interview a little ways back, and we were going to talk about the Obama administration and Pentagon plan to build a new generation of nuclear weapons, which was quite alarming and certainly deserving a lot of discussion in this country and certainly raising the alarm around the world. But since we've scheduled the interview a while back, we came across a story this past week where the Obama administration and the Pentagon announced that they were gearing up to spend $3.4 billion to increase and deploy heavy weapons in NATO countries in Central and Eastern Europe, really kind of escalating the border between Russia and Eastern and NATO countries in Europe. And, you know, it just seems that we're on this march now to revive a new Cold War, which it seems to be happening without much discussion or even debate in this country.
Yeah, I think you'd easily argue that we are in a new Cold War, because not only are we increasing in our spendings on nuclear weapons and conventional weapons that surround Russia, but Russia has also been increasing its military budget. And then the interesting thing is now this is nearly now a three-person Cold War because China has also been increasing its military budget. So we have these three large countries, the U.S. being the largest in the military expenditures, about $600 billion in the base budget, another $70 billion for extra wars, so nearly $700 billion. And if you count some other things that a lot of people don't count, you're really looking at about $1 trillion, and that's definitely more than any other country combined. And now you have, you know, another $400 or $500 billion from Russia and about the same from China, and it's just a large amount of money being spent on weapons pointing at each other.
And Paul, what do you think the danger is here in the escalation along the Russian-European border? What is your largest concern here about you know, the weaponry that's going to be going into this region?
Yeah, so the $3.4 billion is that we're increasing. That's a four times increase, so four times what we spent last year. Is going to go first into troops. So we already have 62,000 troops in some 12 European countries, and we're going to increase that by 10 to 15,000 troops. And then we're going to be giving more money to NATO, spending more money for training, and then probably the most concern is putting more combat vehicles along the Russian border. And this is already has a reaction from Russia, in which they are now putting more vehicles and things on its border. So my biggest concern, obviously, would be, you know, some skirmish that would happen, or, you know, something small and someone makes a mistake, could start like a little mini war there. And then just in the larger concerns about, is this really how we want to be spending our monies? And if you look at our Pentagon spending, we are spending over 50% of our discretionary budget in the U.S. is going to the Pentagon. Now, when you're at home and you're making your own budget, you probably don't spend 50% of it on fences and alarms and security for your family. It's just not the way we normally spend things. And so when we have limited dollars to spend on other things, such as education and roads and stuff, is this really what we want to do? And is this really the solution to dealing with Russia? And I would argue we have had other good things that we've done with Russia, such as the Iran deal, a START treaty, which reduced nuclear weapons between the two countries. There are other avenues in dealing with Russia besides military buildup.
And Paul Gavica Martin is our guest policy and political director with the National Group Peace Action. And we're talking about the evidence suggests that we are in the midst of a new Cold War with Russia. Paul, it's kind of ironic, as you just said, the United States and Russia work very closely together to broker negotiations to get the Iran nuclear deal. And there are still some productive discussions going on in an effort to try and end the war in Syria. The latest, of course, was an effort to negotiate a ceasefire to get humanitarian aid to all those hundreds of thousands, millions of people that are in the crosshairs of bombing and all manner of destruction in that war-torn state. It's kind of odd that there are these two tracks. On one hand, the United States is working closely with Moscow on a number of these, these critical flashpoints in the world. And at the same time, it seems like the U.S. in particular is basically ratcheting up the pressure here to, create an arms race on the east-west border in Europe.
Yeah, it's very strange that we have these two faces, as you mentioned, in our ways of dealing with Russia. We, this really started happening, obviously, around what happened in the Ukraine and Russia's taking over of Crimea. And since then, there's been a lot of demonization of Russia, particularly Putin. And historically, anytime you start demonizing countries, that's when military builds up and issues occur. But at the same time, Russia was a key group of the P5 plus one that got the Iran deal. And as you mentioned, we've been working with Russia, most recently, with an agreement, that came out, of Europe to hopefully get a ceasefire within a week. We weren't able to get quite Russia to say it's going to stop its, some of its airstrikes, but that's hopefully the next step. And, these kind of openings are going to need to be kept. We need to have the relationship with Russia that's going to allow us to deal with other issues. Russia is also concerned about ISIS and has joined with us to deal with issues around ISIS and terrorism. So the building up of forces only sidetracks us from some of the real issues at hand.
Now, I wonder if we turn our attention to the Obama and Pentagon decision to build a new generation of nuclear weapons and your organization's view of that very expensive decision. This is certainly going to be quite costly for the United States taxpayers over the next bunch of years.
Yeah, just a little history. During the Cold War, at one point, the world had some 70,000 nuclear warheads. Now we're down to about 16,000 nuclear warheads. 95% of those are held by Russia or the U.S. And we recently had a good treaty that we got together with Russia a number of years ago and ratified by the U.S. Senate called the New START Treaty. So that's going to bring down the U.S. to about 1,515 strategic warheads in the next couple of years. And then we have a few thousand that are in reserve and a few thousand that are in line to be dismantled in what we thought was going to be an effort to be moving towards zero. There was a very historic speech several years ago by President Obama in Prague in which he talked about getting to a world free of nuclear weapons, one of the first sitting presidents, state this goal, and that we'd be moving towards that. But here we are in our plans. Our plans are now to spend $1 trillion over 30 years on nuclear weapon modernization. And that is basically in four or five parts. So the delivery systems, that are the intercontinental ballistic missiles, submarines and bombers, they're getting old, and so they want to rebuild new ones. The weapons themselves, over time, nuclear weapons have like plastic parts and stuff that wear out. And so they feel like they need to replace them. And hey, while we're replacing them, let's actually make them even better, and maybe even have, more capacity, and make them a better weapon. And then lastly, there's a new cruise missile that they want to make, nuclear capable, costing another $20 or $30 billion. So here at a time when we're moving down to 1500, and the president himself has already said, and his advisors have said, that we could probably cut that down another third, no problem. So we can easily go down to 1,000. And there's even other military experts who agree that we could actually go down to 300 nuclear weapons and still have a deterrent, if you believe in the deterrence policy. But at the same time, we're supposed to be moving to zero, but we're going to spend $1 trillion over 30 years. And that's something that we can't afford.
Paul Martin, the military officials who back this plan to build a new generation of nuclear weapons say that this is driven in large part because of safety concerns of this older equipment, this older arsenal of nuclear weapons. Do you buy that argument that somehow the current nuclear weapons in the U.S. arsenal are unsafe and this is necessary?
No, not at all. I mean, if they really were concerned about safety of nuclear weapons, they'd be doing more around security issues and making sure that they were secure. You know, in the last few years, there have been a number of stories of, one, there was nuns who were able to break into a nuclear weapons facility and spill their blood on nuclear weapons themselves. A couple of other incidents like that. I mean, that is really where you were concerned about unsafe nuclear weapons. The way the weapons are now, there's no way they're going to accidentally go off. That's not an issue. If you want to think about safety, another thing you can do is they're still on what's called hair trigger alert, which means our president can launch nuclear weapons within a couple of minutes without thinking. And we've already several times had close calls where Russia has almost launched nuclear warheads because it's thought that European weather missiles were actually an attack on them and they were within minutes of launching on us. So we actually need more time to make this kind of a decision. We don't need weapons on hair trigger alert. The Obama administration could change that. That would make us more safe. Otherwise, what their major concern is that some of these weapons over time might not give the exact yield that they say they will. But these weapons, we're talking weapons who are now, you know, 1,000 more times powerful than the warheads that were used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which killed several hundred thousand people. I mean, these are more than powerful. If they were to be used, they would definitely work. It would be a horrific thing. It's possible it could cause a nuclear winter. So the safety argument, I'm not buying it, and the taxpayers shouldn't either.
Paul, I wanted to ask you about the particular danger that some people see in this new design of a cruise missile. Back in October, William J. Perry, U.S. Secretary of Defense from 1994 to 97, and Andy Weber, who was Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense Programs from 2009 to 2014, wrote this op-ed piece in the Washington Post titled, "Mr. President, Kill the New Cruise Missile." What's the concern about this new cruise missile?
Well, one, when we start making, it would be a smaller yield, and now we're starting to think of more usable nuclear weapons. And it's very difficult for me to imagine a usable nuclear weapon. I mean, you just look at a very small nuclear weapon and what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where, you know, you just take one of the cities, and we're talking tens of thousands of people who were killed instantaneously, and then there were tens of thousands of people who were killed over time because of the radiation. If you look at the pictures, you can see a city, especially Hiroshima, which was a flat city, which was completely destroyed. Not very many buildings survived. I mean, that kind of human and economic damage with a very small yield, this is what we were thinking about having on a cruise missile. How would you think about using that? I mean, how could you justify the deaths of civilians that obviously are going to occur using such a weapon? You know, we're now supposed to be in the area of smart bombs, you know, tactical decisions, you know, Navy SEALs that can go in and just get the bad guys. Why would we need such a weapon that's only going to then spur on countries like, you know, Iran, North Korea, whoever else, into a possible new nuclear weapons arms race and people trying to build smaller, so-called more usable nuclear weapons? This is not going to make America safer. It's just going to make us unsafe. And then you got to look at the cost, $20 to $30 billion to build these cruise missiles. You know, what else could we be spending this on to make us safer? You know, and some of the things are, you know, the bigger question is how you prevent terrorism in the first place. And the studies show, experts agree, it's through higher levels of education, alleviation of poverty, the feeling of freedom, limiting the access to weapons, other things that are going to deal with terrorism, not a nuclear cruise missile.
Paul, what's your understanding of who these new weapon systems are designed to counter? Is it Russia? I assume it's Russia, but is there any thought that it's anybody else?
Well, in China, China does have several hundred nuclear weapons, but some analysts actually think that China's nuclear weapons aren't even on warheads. I mean, they're not even on any weapons, that they're warheads are actually separated from missiles, which is certainly a step that we would like to see taken here in the U.S. Russia and China. And then the idea is just to keep the level that we have. And the concern that they have is that these weapons are not going to be as accurate or as you couldn't relate to the yields as we could 10 or 15 years ago. But the percentage difference between, you know, 1 megaton and 10 to 20% difference is really not a big difference and wouldn't matter much in a war. So why we want to spend these $1 trillion over 30 years is beyond me. It's a lot of money. But you can also just look at, you know, where are these ICBMs? Where are these submarine manufacturers? Where are these bomber manufacturers? You know, and then it ends up being members of Congress and their districts who are, you know, fighting to get, you know, some of these dollars to be spent in their districts. That's why there's something called the missile caucus, which is a caucus of the states where these missiles are going to be built and who are going to be getting the largesse of these funds.
Paul, Washington and Moscow both worked together to broker the deal with Iran to prevent that nation from acquiring nuclear weapons. What does it say? What example is being set here by both the United States and Russia in modernizing their nuclear weapon systems to other nations around the world that, you know, in some fashion have made moves to acquire nuclear weapons themselves, but told by, you know, the international community in the West in particular that this is not something that they would stand for?
Yeah, I think it makes us look like hypocrites. We have Obama on the one hand saying that we should be moving towards a world free of nuclear weapons, who worked with Russia to actually pass a treaty that would reduce our we have the country, but at the same time, here we are going to spend money that would keep that number at the same number in perpetuity. So all this $1 trillion is to pass the same level that we just negotiated forever, rather than looking at making more cuts down the road. You know, do we really need to have missiles, submarines? You know, there are submarines right now, 24 hours a day, in all kinds of places in the world that we don't know where they're at, carrying nuclear weapon missiles at all times just to react to a possible nuclear strike. I mean, it's sort of insanity when you think about it, and it's very expensive. And then we have bombers ready to be launched at a moment's notice to bomb anywhere in the world with nuclear weapons. Do we really need this three triad of nuclear weapon systems to make us feel safe and to deter another country from attacking us? It's just, it's Cold War insanity. I don't understand it. And I'd be interested to hear if your listeners agree that this is just not the way we should be spending our very precious resources in securing America.
Paul, we're losing your signal a little bit. I don't know if you can move around a little bit, but I just have a final question for you, and that is, as we seem to be moving towards a full-blown Cold War again, with a nuclear arms race and new weapons flowing to the east-west border in Europe. Is your organization and other peace groups looking to make the issue of a new Cold War and opposition to it by the public a debate point in this year's presidential election contest?
We certainly do. In Peace Action, we use every tool in the social toolbox for social change. Which includes we have endorsed candidates and given money to candidates in elections. For 25 years, we haven't endorsed anyone for president, but we just actually endorsed Bernie Sanders in the primary for the Democrats. And one of the reasons we endorse him is he talks specifically about Pentagon bloat and that the Pentagon budget is too high. And he's also one of the few senators to co-sponsor something called the SANE Act. And as I mentioned, we were formed as SANE, so this is legislation named after us that would cut $1 billion over 10 years from nuclear weapons budgets. And so we are certainly supporting a candidate and bringing these issues up, and we'll continue to have a push for legislation called the SANE Act that's both in the Senate and in the House. And people can find out more information on our website, which is peace-action.org.
Very often, Hillary Clinton is characterized as a hawk by her stands on the issues, vote for the Iraq War, her conduct as Secretary of State. Do we know Hillary Clinton's position on this building of a new generation of nuclear weapons?
Not specifically. I mean, she has talked about the possibility of moving to having less nuclear weapons. She did support the START treaty, but she hasn't been very forthcoming on exactly where she's at on the current modernization track. It looked like she was very supportive of President Obama while she was Secretary of State, so that would be supporting his budget on these matters of late, but at the same time also supportive of his Prague speech. So there's a little bit of, you know, one hand saying one thing and one hand saying the other.
Well, just a final question for you, Paul, and you can leave our audience with your web address one last time. But what do we know about public opinion when it comes to countering Russian aggression in Ukraine and the Crimea and the rationale for building up weapon systems in Eastern and Central Europe and this new generation of nukes?
Yeah, on nuclear weapons, it's 70-80%. If you ask a very well-balanced question, who say we should be moving to zero, at the very least, moving quite down to very few nuclear weapons and not spending all this money. I haven't seen specific questions asked around the what's going on with us in Russia, per se, but also well-balanced questions. People tend to say that we're spending too much on Pentagon spending writ large. So there's certainly public support for spending less, yet at the same time, people can be moved to fear around ISIS and tend to say spend as much as we need to deal with terrorism. So there's a little bit of confusion with the voters certainly has been in the past. That's, I think, a bit driven by fear. There certainly is quite a bit of fear, even though there's been very few deaths here in the U.S. by terrorists over the last 10 or 15 years.
Well, it's horrifying to think that U.S. nuclear weapons could be at all useful in the fight against terrorism, any kind of terrorism, I would think. I would hope. But
yeah, no, it's the problem with the nuclear weapon. There's not a smart bomb in any way,
yeah.
And especially the ones that we have today.
All right, Paul. The website again, one last time.
peace-action.org.
All right. Appreciate you making time to be with us again tonight, Paul. Appreciate all the important work you do as well, and I know my audience shares that as well. We'll stay in touch. Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye. That's Paul Gravica-Martin, Policy and Political Director with the National Group Peace Action, talking about the escalation of weapons along the east-west border in Europe and the plans to spend $1 trillion on a new generation of nuclear weapons by the Obama administration and the Pentagon. Not such good news here in this election year.